Hey everyone, this is Richie Ramone, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and it's very exciting today because we have with us in the studio Richie Ramone. That's a Ramone, people. That's one of the seven Ramones. It's hard to get a Ramone right now because sadly, we've lost four of them. Rock in peace to Joey, Johnny, Dee Dee, and Tommy. But we've got Richie Ramone. Richie, thank you so much for joining us today. Sure, How are you doing?
It's doing great. I'm doing really good. Happy to be here.
Let me tell you something. Richie is a tall dude, and your fingers are... Look at those long fingers, and it's amazing.
Wow. You know.
How did you like that?
It helps me when I play piano.
Do you play other instruments other than drums?
Sure. You know, like a little guitar and bass and a little piano. Just enough to write, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable doing that on stage, though.
What's your instrument of choice to write songs with? Is it the piano?
Probably, yeah. But I like the guitar for getting rhythms down, you know? It's hard to do on the piano. But then again, songs I wrote for the Ramones, I wrote on the piano.
And when you play out live with your band currently, are you behind the kit the whole time? Do you step out in front? What do you do? A little bit of everything?
Yeah, no, I play drums and sing, and then Andy comes on. He travels with us, and when I go up front, he plays drums for me.
Nice.
So it works out well, because it's behind all that wood and metal, you just can't sit there the whole night, and you can't connect with the audience. You have to go to the front. You have to kick the kids in the head and have fun with them. Otherwise, it's just, you know, I think it just gets a little boring that way. They want to interact with you,
yeah.
And they really can't touch you when you wait, you know.
When you're behind the kit.
Right.
They want to see you slam behind the kit, but then you come out.
Right,
and
well, I have to play drums. That's what they know me as. And, you know, that's my first love. I'm not, you know, a front man, you know. But
you are now.
Yeah.
A friend of mine sent me, when I told him you were coming on the show, and I want to read because he sent me a quote from himself. His name is Rob Alba. And he said, "I saw the Ramones once with Richie, and that guy was a beast. He played those songs faster than the speed of light." That's nice.
Sure.
What do you think of that?
I think that's great. I'm glad, you know, somebody noticed.
You do seem like you were the heaviest hitter of the three Ramones drummers.
Well, not so much heavy hitter. It was, I remember, you know, growing up when 1980 came and all that music came from Europe and stuff like that, you know, it seemed to all be like on a click, and it was just like dance drumming. You drummed and you became this solid machine. And that's, mm-hmm. Then when I got in the band, you know, like Tommy was loose, kind of like Charlie Watts, you know?
Yeah.
That fit for that kind of punk sound. But it changed when I got in there because of just my dynamics and how my tempos were just perfect, and I, you know, wasn't playing fills, just, you know, something to groove on.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of worked, you know. Dee Dee was all around me, so nobody was stepping on each other. It was a good lineup.
And was drums always your instrument of choice? Like growing up, was that the first instrument you gravitated towards?
Kindergarten, I used to, you know, when the you'd have recess and the teacher would pull out that dusty, dirty box with those instruments in them, the
mm-hmm.
toys.
Mm-hmm.
I never picked up anything I could blow into. I'd always pick up the sand blocks or something that made a rhythm. So from 5, 6 years old, I knew what there was something going on.
Everyone's kind of an amateur drummer. I mean, when I drive around in my car, I'm drumming on the steering wheel nonstop. I mean, I got busted the other day. A woman's right next to me, and I'm drumming, and I look, and I just smiled. What are you going to do? You're busted. Wasn't picking my nose. I was just drumming. So that was cool. You grew up a big family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Five kids.
Yes.
And you're right in the center.
Right in the middle. Middle child.
See, I was a middle child too, but I only had one above and one below, but we need all the attention.
It's a Sputnik baby. 1956, the Russians lost the Sputnik.
Is that what they call it? Is that a real term? A Sputnik baby?
To me, it is. But okay. I think I've heard that before.
If not, you just coined a great term that people are going to use. So were you a rambunctious kid? Were you always trying to get attention? Maybe not in a good way.
Yeah, I was pretty. I was pretty demanding. they say the middle kids are different than the rest. So I don't know.
I think it's true. I think it's true.
Yeah, I was a brat. Let's put it that way.
were you a good student, or were you a trouble in school?
No, I was good. I was good till, high school, to the end of high school. I knew that at that point, 12th grade, I didn't want to go to college, like my other brothers and sisters mm-hmm. did. I just wanted to get on the road and play music, and maybe that was a mistake. But so I remember the last quarter, I just got all Fs. I didn't care. I never went to school because I knew I had enough to graduate and get my diploma. But before that,
The all Fs, you were able to graduate.
Yeah, because I had enough for the first three quarters. I knew that, I still had enough to get the diploma.
Are the, because I'm imagining myself as a dad, if my oldest daughter wanted to go on the road and play drums and not go to college, I wouldn't be that happy with it. How were your parents? Were they okay with
it? Well, I was 17 now, I was kind of like doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. My mother would always go to the car in the morning and empty the ashtray full of the roaches from the marijuana cigarettes. And that's as far as she'd go, just to let you know, hey, I know what you're doing.
I know what you're up to.
She always put them right on my seat. And back then we had those jacked up cars with Krager mags and Hearst. 1974 was, we had hot rods then still.
Yeah. So your parents knew what you were up to, and they were just hoping you wouldn't get in too much trouble.
Yeah. Well, they were kind of strict, but At that time, there was all times before where they wanted to send me to, the bad boys school and all that stuff. But, it never really happened.
That's good. No military school for Richie.
No. So instead of, since they didn't have to pay for college, I got, my mother bought me a quadraphonic stereo. Remember those? Quadraphonic.
Four speakers.
Yeah, and I think I got the Who album or something like that. Yeah. But
because there weren't many albums that were actually recorded in quadraphonic back then.
Yeah, they got off easy with me. I just left and I was gone.
I should mention that the reason that you're here is because you have a new autobiography that just came out. Mm-hmm. I Know Better Now, My Life Before, During, and After the Ramones. Mm-hmm. We're talking a little bit about the before currently.
Right.
But are you a parent, by the way? Do you have kids?
No, I do not.
No kids?
Mm-mm.
All right. Did you never want kids?
Probably not. I'm too selfish, I guess. Where, I want to be...
You want to be
the focus of attention. And it's, I don't think I was ever in that position where you could, really have the child and go on the road and be a punk rocker and play music. Because, there's not a ton of money in it. And I think it would just added a lot more problems. And I had 14, my brothers and sisters all had tons of kids. So
your Uncle Richie.
I'd borrow one for a week and that was it.
That was enough.
Give it back, yeah.
I actually find that admirable when people actually know, I don't want to have kids and these are my reasons. And then, because some people, they have their same reasons and then they have kids and then they're not good parents. So good for you.
Yeah.
You knew.
I guess so. I guess I was lucky too. I've been with a lot of women and I was lucky.
All right. Well, look, I want to talk a little bit before we get into the Ramones stuff. You have a bunch of music on your own. You have a bunch mm-hmm. You have two solo albums proper.
Yeah.
And on iTunes, the first song I think this is the most recent thing. It might not be, but the single called The Last Time.
Yeah, that was the most recent. My dad died last February. So I got back home and I wrote that song. It was really weird. It takes me a long time to write songs. That's why I put out an album every 3 years because I just want it to be right and mean something and not just slop it out there. But those lyrics came to me in an afternoon. It was really crazy. So,
well, yeah, when I listened to this song, I was like, oh, wow, this is a really touching song. And I kind of felt like I knew what it was about, but I'm glad you just told us it's about your dad's passing.
Yeah, he waited. My mother kept calling me. They're in New Jersey. And she said, I've seen him a few times, but now he was like really out of it. And then they said 2 or 3 days he was in home hospice, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, then finally she said, well, wait till he goes. And then Saturday they kept saying, you got to go because he's waiting for you. Mm-hmm. He just has his mouth open and breathing. His eyes are shut. So I don't know. I got there like 2 in the morning. By 4 in the morning, he passed.
No.
Pretty crazy. Once he, I guess, knew I was there type of thing.
Yeah. I hear that story a lot. People hang on to see one of their loved ones.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear a little bit of this because this is a great song. I actually think people are going to be a little bit surprised because this, you know, when you say Richie Ramone, you might not think of a song like this. And this is a really beautiful song. So this is called The Last Time. Pretty great. That's really nice.
Thanks.
I like it. Now, when you played that for your mom the first time, what was her reaction?
Yeah, they all like it. But
yeah, who's not
like,
going to
really,
like it?
You know, music buff. She's proud to have, you know, Ramon as a son and all that, but, you know.
That's what I was going to say, too, or ask you, was when you're a troubled kid and you don't go to college and you want to play drums and it's like probably not the greatest thing as a parent. But then when you finally have success, they're probably, you know, so proud, your biggest fans.
Yeah. She was always very supportive. You know, she's always very supportive of music. That's why she didn't say, no, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to do.
Yeah,
you
that's good.
Go to college, you know, I mean, growing up playing drums in the basement, smashing around, you know, having people over, like when you're 14 and playing in the basement, you know, it's a big deal for a parent to let you do that.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard. It's hard for a parent to, they have expectations of what they want their kid to do. But, you know, sometimes you have to let your kids just be who they're going to be or else it's going to be this. You're going to be butting heads all the time.
Yeah, well, that's hard. You know, I grew up in the time where, you know, children should be seen and not heard. That was the standard motto, you know. My father would come home and my mother would say, everybody go to your room, you know, until he settled in, you know. So that was kind of weird, but my mother was the protector to all the kids, you know. So.
Yeah, I think that's how it was back in the day. That's how dads were. That's how moms were. That's how it was.
Yeah, so.
All right, 2016. This is your most recent solo release, full album, Cellophane. Where's that title come from?
It just came from the song, you know, the song Cellophane, which was, you know, it was kind of like, you know, how night after night being on the road, one of those kind of songs, you just feel like, oh, maybe you don't want to play that night, or, you know, maybe something's bothering you and you feel like you're wrapped in cellophane, you know, and then when you get there, the car pulls up and the kids start yelling and they start yelling your name, you know, you kind of break out of this shell and you go like, wow, here we go again. It's time to entertain, you know, because it's all about the kids and the fans. I keep saying kids, but there's a lot of people on my shows older than me, you know, but it's all about them, you know.
It's the connection with
them.
Yeah,
they buy the ticket, you know. It's not about me at all. It's about them. I just want to entertain them and let them go home and say, wow, what a great night that was, you know.
Well, the first single that you released off of this album is actually a cover of a Depeche Mode song called Enjoy the Silence. So let's hear a little bit of this and then you can tell us why you chose this.
Words like violence bring the silence. Come crashing in into my little world. Painful to me, pierce right through me. Can't you understand? All ever wanted, all ever needed is here.
unnecessary. They can only do harm.
That's a nice cover. That's a good.
Such a
that's a good one. You want, how much you want to hear? You want
no,
to hear
that's
more?
Enough. No.
Got so many songs queued up. We just play a little bit. Just tease them. Then they'll go to iTunes and buy this thing.
No, it's always, you know, I remember my first album, you know, I couldn't find the right cover. And this cover kind of worked. You know, you got to like try to make it your own. And I've always loved that band. The Latin community loves that band. You know, the message is, you know, kind of clever because you can like take it a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
Depeche Mode always does that, you know. A lot of the songs are about, you know, death and things like that, but you don't really know they're talking about that. It's more like relationships. And I thought I did a really cool thing. It's a lot of fun to go to the DJ, and when I do the DJ shows in South America and play that song, you know, it's really cool.
South America, you are still gigantic down in South America, correct? Is that where the most rabid fans are?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Argentina and Brazil. Number one is probably Argentina.
The Ramones, when they would go down there, they're like the Beatles down there. It's insane.
Yeah, it used to be really scary sometimes. You know?
Was it more scary than exciting or thrilling?
Sometimes scary because there'd be hundreds of kids, you know, you get in the van, they start wanting to turn it over, you know, and rocking it. And so you got to get out of there. And wherever you go, they're flying down the streets, banging on the windows. So it can get a little crazy. But
so when it's crazy like that, you can't really have any personal contact with the fans, right? You could probably get right on the stage, get off and get to the hotel. Is it all hotel living at that point? Because if you go out, it's too dangerous.
Yeah, it's a little weird to go out. So, but now when I go down there, it's still a big deal, but you got to remember now we're in a different time, you know. 86, 87 was different. 87 was the first time the Ramones ever went there. And that's when I was still in the band. And then they went in 91 again. But, I come out after the shows and meet the kids, and it's rough. It's really hard. I got, you know, 200 kids pushing and shoving, but the security gives me like a big ring and helps me out. But I'll stand right in there and sign anything they want for an hour after the show.
That's so nice.
They like that. And I think that's important now. We live in a different thing. You can't really hide behind a glass wall anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
It is, anytime I've met someone as a fan, you know, after a show, it really meant a lot to me if they were, you know, giving of their time. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you don't have to. You gave us the music. We bought the music. We saw your show. You don't have to do that. But when people do, I really appreciate it. And I got to tell you, everyone listening, Richie signed a ton of stuff today. His hands probably cramped up. We had him sign so much stuff. Mm. And I thank you for that because that's all stuff for the listeners. And I appreciate it.
Sure.
Next song I'm going to play off Cellophane is, Braggadocio?
Braggadocio, yeah.
All right, let's hear it. That's a great tune. The drums are slamming on that.
Yeah, that's about, you know, what punk rock's about. Punk rock's not about the haircut or being cool. Punk rock is, you know, being true to yourself, being a real person, not a phony. That's what I believe. You have something to say, you say. You say it like a man to someone's face, you know, don't go behind people's back. Just be, you know, a real person. That's what I think, you know, punk rock is.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I mean, again, we live in an age where it's people sit behind their computer screen and they tweet out or they post, you know, anything they want to post because they're not in front of the person, because in front of them, they would never say things like that.
Yeah, I call them trolls. I have plenty of trolls who come through and post stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Ramones are kind of, they're broken up into three different lineups. The lineup, you know, you have the Tommy lineup, which only lasted less than me, around 4 years. Then you have the Marky who came. And then you have my era, then you even have the CJ era,
yeah.
And Marky came back. So there's different fans for different time periods, and not necessarily do they all
line up.
All line up under the stars. So the trolls will come after you. Well, and you just have to be tough and ignore it and just let it fall off your shoulder, you know?
Well, I got to tell you, I love it all. I don't care who's in the band. I love it all.
Okay.
And I just want to, but in case I forget to say it, you joining the band, you kept the band solid in the 80s. I mean, I really think you kept the band strong and going. I mean, the three albums you play on are tough, and people love those albums. And CJ in the 90s kept everyone going. And that's why this brings me to why I'm so mad at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that you and CJ aren't in there, because you should be. Because it's not like you were just there for a year and on one album. You were on three albums. And CJ, I think, is on, is it three or four albums? Three albums also. And I mean, you guys needed to be recognized there too. I know the guys recognized you, but you should be in there too. And that sucks.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that, but you know, that's just another thing to collect dust on the shelf. So people really know, you know, what I did in the band and how I contributed songwriting-wise and all that stuff, you know. I mean, I wrote Somebody Put Something in My Drink, which is probably, you know, Ramones' top 20 of all time. They did that song till the very last show after I left in 87.
Yeah.
That stayed in their set. And the way the Ramones worked at every album is you change maybe like four songs, but the structure of the set stayed the same. And it was interesting they kept that song in there because it was strong, you know. So
well, it's not. I have it. It's not. I'm gonna call an audible and I'm gonna play some of that. It's out of my running order, but this is Somebody Put Something in My Drink. It kicks off the album Animal Boy. It's the first song on the album, and it's written by you solo, Richie composition. Let's hear some of it.
Somebody put something in my drink.
Killer. It's killer. Does someone put something in your drink once?
Oh yeah,
all the time. You just make it sound like it was all the time.
Well, maybe more than once, but you know, we used to go out in New York City when I first moved there. I think I was like 20 maybe, and we really didn't have money, so when we go to one university and places like that down the East Village, when people got up to dance or to go to the jukebox, we'd steal the drinks. And that's how we drank all night for free. And we did that all the time till one night, you know, I started feeling odd. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? I got to go home. And, you know, it's really scary to have a drink with a spike or acid or like that.
I would imagine,
yeah. And you don't know about it. It's different if you know it's coming. So it was kind of weird. And then I finally realized what it was. And that's how, you know, it all came about. And I told Dee Dee that story, you know, like 8 years later or whenever.
Indeed, he said, I put that in your drink.
No, he said, you should write that song, and that's how it happened.
This is, I got a story about the album Animal Boy. When this came out, I worked at a record store. I worked at a place called National Record Mart. And all the employees, the music that we played in the store, we were allowed to play one side of an album, and then it would be someone else's turn. So my friend who also worked there, Craig, we were both Ramones fans, so I would play side A, and then it would be his turn, and he would play side B, so we would play the whole thing in store,
okay.
And then eventually our manager said, you guys have to pick different albums. You can't play the whole, but for as long as we could, we played Animal Boy top to bottom.
Wow.
And
okay.
It's, let me ask you about the album cover on here. You, is that a real monkey on the front?
Yeah, that's, I think, Zippy, the famous chimp. He was expensive. He was like, he got like, you know, $2,000, I think, for that shoot, you know?
And did you, he probably got more for the shoot than you guys got.
Well, we don't get anything. Shoot.
Now you're holding the monkey on the front. It was that. Did you want to hold the monkey, or did the other guys not want to, and so you had to?
It was not. It was, you know, Joey was supposed to hold the monkey, and the monkey would go to Joey. It wouldn't stay there. It would just keep jumping to me for an hour. Then I think John tried to hold the monkey, and it pissed on his shoulder, so he was done with the monkey. And Didi, forget about it. So I was like, well, Richie, now you hold the monkey. You know, and that's how, you know, came about.
And the monkey warmed up to you.
Well, you know, I'm an animal lover, I'm an animal, you know, rights kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I think the monkey understood that. And
you have pets right now?
Sure, I always have pets.
What do you have?
Dogs. I mainly have dogs.
What kind of dogs?
I have a, what do they call it? It's a husky Labrador mix. It's a big dog, it's like 70 pounds. You know, that's my main dog. But I also have other things like turtles.
There's the soft side of Richie comes through with the turtles. Let's jump into, we'll get back to Animal Boy, but we got to start with Too Tough to Die. First of all, you joined the, because you're in the Time Has Come Today. You're in that video. You didn't play on that song, but you're in the video because Marky was gone and you're in the band. Was there an audition process, or did one of the guys know you? How did you get into the Ramones?
Total audition, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know them personally. I, you know, well, gosh, it's all in my book. I guess you didn't read my book.
No. Look, I've had other guys on that have books, and when I ask questions like this, they look at me like, it's in the book. But this is for our listeners. Well, the listeners haven't read the book. Maybe.
Well, anyway, no. It was,
no, I love the book. The book is fantastic, and it's one of the better. There's a ton of books out there. There's a Didi book. There's a Johnny book. There's a Marky book. And this one is in my top two.
Okay. Well, how does that make me feel?
You could be number one.
Okay.
No, I love it. It's a great book, Richie, seriously. But tell the world about how you get into the
I was notes. Playing in a band called Velveteen, and, you know, I used to hang at the Shirts house a lot. The Shirts were a big, you know, band with Annie Golden, and used to play CBGBs and all that stuff. And they had this big house in Brooklyn, three stories, that people paid rent. They had a recording studio. It was a clubhouse. We'd go there every day. So Larry mentioned to the, you know, when they were getting rid of Marky, you know, he told him about me. He said, oh, this guy, I know this guy. I was Richie Beau at the time. That was my name. And you got to check him out and blah, blah, blah. And that's how it happened. I got a call from Monty, the road manager, to come down and audition.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like being in the right spot at the right time type of thing. And just went through like any other blind audition.
Yeah.
Went in there and...
Were you a fan? You were a fan of the band?
Not really. I mean, I saw them in high school when 1975, I believe, just out of high school. I was very interested. Like, wow, this sound, this is something new, and all that.
Yeah.
But I was still playing in funk bands, horn bands, because you know my brother was a sax player, and so I was still doing all that stuff. And never really wasn't. I guess I was younger than these guys, so I really wasn't on that scene in New York City in the late 70s.
Right.
I really didn't get there to 80. But no, I didn't, you know, I didn't have, I think I had their first record, but I didn't have anything else besides that. You know, I can't call myself, well, I was a fan and knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to Sire and get all the CDs and learn all the songs. But once you're in that band, then you realize, wow, what you've been missing and what a fan I became. I mean, Joey's voice was so special, you know.
And is Joey's the person that he became the guy that you hung with out of the four, you mm-hmm. and him were tight.
Yeah, indeed, you know, I mean, but Joey and I, what was I in that band? 4 years, 10 months, I think we were together every day. Even when we weren't touring, I'd go to the East Village and we'd go out stomping around. And yeah, he was so supportive. He was very comfortable behind his rose-colored glasses. He always pushed me to sing more and do more and just write, and never like, oh, you're the drummer, just stay back there and don't shake your head too much, you know? So it was really cool.
When you and Joey are out in the Village walking around, I mean, Joey's a pretty recognizable guy. Mm-hmm. He must have got stopped every, you know, 10 feet.
Yeah, all the time. But he was always gracious. You know, they taught me a lot how to treat the fans and take your time, say hello, sign stuff, and, you know, don't be arrogant. They kind of guided me, because that was my first national act coming mm-hmm. in there.
Sure.
I guess I got in that band when I was 25, So you're still kind of a baby then, you know, you're still all over the place and wild. You know, now it seems like 25 is old, but I don't know, 1983, it seemed different.
Yeah.
It was before, you know, all this, you know, media and the internet and, you know, the cell phones. And so it's kind of a different thing.
You don't care for the social media, it sounds like. Are you into it or you don't?
No, I like care for it.
You do? You know, if it's used properly.
Yeah, I have. It's great that the bands are able to do that and put their songs out there and things like that. But, you know, back in the 80s, it was like the Wild West. Now, wherever I am, you never know who's listening or who's taking your photo because they all have these, you know, little cameras.
Sure.
Before, they had to lug in a big camera.
Right.
So
now you got to watch yourself everywhere.
You could be, you know, badder then, you know. Now you have to be a little more behaved.
Yeah, that's true. You know? That's true. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. When you joined the band, did they just let you play the way you played drums, or didn't want you to play like Tommy? They didn't want you to play like Marky.
I already knew how to play like Tommy, and Marky. Nobody ever wants to play like him. He's god awful. You know? He doesn't even know where the one is. I mean, you know, he was really, really fortunate to have that job. I mean, Tommy was great, you know.
Yeah.
But Mark is just, you know, whatever. You know?
But he's here. Come on in, Mark. No, he's not.
No, I knew what to do, and
yeah.
I remember that first record we were making, and I said to Tommy, is everything cool? We're doing good. He said, you're doing great. Just do what you're doing.
Yeah, and see, that's kind of cool. Tommy is a co-producer on that record with mm-hmm. Ed Stasium. So mm-hmm. we've got the original Ramones drummer in there
right.
in the recording studio with the new guy, Richie.
Right.
Was that your first time in a professional like recording atmosphere like that?
No, I've been professional recording situations, mm-hmm. but that was my first national act, so it was kind of like, you know, here I was getting a salary and just recording, and it was kind of a whole new ball game for me.
And are you a band member at that point, or are you a hired gun?
No, I was a band member.
You're a band member.
But I'm a hired gun. You know, I'm due a salary. I didn't, you know,
yeah,
partake in all the other goodies, you know, the T-shirts and all that stuff. So
you didn't... Now, this is what I've heard before. You didn't get any of that T-shirt money, even though your name's on the T-shirt at that time.
No. Mm-mm. And that's what, you know, after 4 years, I started to question, like, come on, you know, you got to cut me in a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's where kind of everything started to blow up, you know. It wasn't like, I don't deserve to have an equal thing. You know, I wasn't there. I didn't invent this sound. I wasn't there in 74, 75. But, you know, you got to start, you know, you want me to be Rich Ramone and write songs and do this. You're using my picture. You got my name there.
Yeah.
You know, you could have just threw me a bone. That's all I wanted because I wanted to feel loved, I guess, more than, oh, I'm going to get rich if I get, you know, an extra $50 a night in T-shirts. But
yeah, you just want some self-respect.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, I have to stress this. You wrote 6 Ramones songs.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote them. You sing on one. I'll be playing that in a little bit. You sing lead on it. And, you know, this was not something that the other drummers did. Tommy right. might have got co-writing somewhere when the songs were written by the band or whatever. But this was a different thing. This is a step up that you're doing.
Right.
Bringing songs to the band. That's amazing. When you brought songs... Were you allowed to bring songs? Were you encouraged to bring songs for Too Tough to Die? Or were you just ballsy and you just said, I got songs?
Joey encouraged me and Dee Dee. They said, come on, write. You need to start writing. Because I really never wrote seriously like mm-hmm. before that. He said, write, you know. And Johnny would go, did you write these songs, you know? Because Marky would bring songs, but his brother would write them, his twin brother. So, you know, they were kind of keen on that. But I would write them on my little Casio keyboard,
uh-huh.
and then Phil Cabano from Monster Magnet. I don't know if you know Phil Cabano. He would come up. I'd go to his place, 6-story walk up in Manhattan, and then he'd lay the guitar on my little track, you know, so I could pull the keyboard out, and that's how I did it. And then I'd demo that. We'd all go to Gary Kerfurt's. Everybody played their demos, and unfortunately, you know, John would only allow me to have one song because, you know, I would be eating into his pocketbook.
Mm.
So,
all right. Well, let's hear the one song that is actually on Too Tough to Die that you wrote. And this is, and then we'll hear the one that was on a B-side and then eventually on the re-release of Too Tough to Die. But this is, first one's Humankind.
not fair. Why should we all live in fear? Humankind, it's a test to see who's the very best. Humankind, I don't know why no one cares who lives or dies. Humankind, don't look at me, look at yourself. What do you see?
So the first time that you would hear Joey Ramone singing lyrics that you wrote, was that, that's got to be kind of a thrill.
Yeah, totally. You know, he'd always try to, you know, sing it like my demos, you know. Uh-huh. Like when you hear Something in My Drink, he sings it real hard and edgy, you know. It's like, oh, Joey, just sing it with your crooning style, you know. But he wanted to, like, you know, sing it like me, you know. It's kind of funny.
Now, this next song, this was not on the album. It was a B-side. I cannot believe that this song didn't make it on the album, because as much as I love this album, this song is better than a couple of songs that are on the album. I would have definitely put Smash You on
this.
Well,
there's a funny story, because Beggar's Banquet in England, mm-hmm. he loved my material, Martin, and he'd always take a second song from me, because until the last album I did, I got two songs on, but the first two albums, I got Martin would take another song of mine on the European release. That's how that worked.
Well, this is Smash You, and this kicks ass.
Yeah, people like this song.
Drums sounding great on that song. Kicking ass.
They always sound great.
They always sound great. When people first bought Too Tough to Die, they dropped the needle. The first thing they hear, recorded by Richie Ramone, would be Mama's Boy.
Couldn't keep a secret that a concrete skull. You couldn't shut up. You're an imbecile. You're an ugly doll. You couldn't shut up, you had a bad, bad breath. Couldn't hold your tongue, you were just too young. Like a 2-year-old, you told you were all the same. Jelly bean bread. Everyone's a secret nerd, everyone's a closet name.
I don't want to end it. I want to just hear the whole thing. Now, there's also a third producer on this album, David A. Stewart from Eurythmics. Mm-hmm. He comes in, he produces Howling at the Moon. Was that because at Sire Records, were they trying desperately for a Ramones hit? Is that what they were trying?
Well, we were all kind of the same family, and he wanted to do something with us. So I think that's why we bought him. And it's funny, he called me the human drum machine, because that was, you know, I didn't do any Ramone songs with click tracks on those records. And he was like, well, I got to sync, you know, I have to sync up the synthesizers. I need a click. I said, don't you worry about it. And, you know, I was like, you know, a half a beat per minute off from the beginning to the end, you know, which is really ridiculous for a drummer. And then I played the chimes on. He says, oh, you could play the chimes? Because he was going to hire someone to get them in, you know, the bells, the things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know how to do that. I'm classically trained, so it's kind of fun.
That's excellent. All right, let's hear Howlin' at the Moon.
No more narco, no more gangsters.
I remember walking into a record store when Too Tough to Die came out and seeing that album cover, because back then you didn't really know when albums were quite going to come out. Now you can just go on the internet and, oh, that's going to be released this day or that day. Mm-hmm. But to walk in and see that sitting on the shelf, that album cover, it's just so iconic. It's just, it looks exactly what an album called Too Tough to Die should look like. What can you tell us about that photo shoot, or where was that taken? Do you remember?
Nah, New York, I'm sure.
New York.
George Dubose, you know, he did, you know, good friend of mine. He did all those album covers, you know? So,
it's just great. It's just fantastic. Like, it's to me, it's iconic.
Okay. You like that? You like?
I love it.
Shadows?
I just think, because like you knew it was the Ramones, you knew it was you guys, even though it was, you know, yeah, you guys are in shadow. It just.
Well, you know, it was Central Park.
Okay.
So, just so you know, I thought everybody knew that. But it was in Central Park, and we shot with all the lights, and for some reason the light went out on this particular photograph, and that's the one they kept, you know. Maybe because it was a new guy, and the funny story about it is everybody's spread eagle when they stand, so I put my legs together and turned a little bit so you would know it's me. So I didn't want to stand the same way if you look at it closely.
All right, let's hear the title track, and then we'll move into Animal Boy. But this is Too Tough to Die. How long was the tour to promote Too Tough to Die? How long would you guys be out?
I don't know. I have no idea. But we used to go out longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like now, I 6 weeks is my maximum. That's it. I have to come back and then go out again. Otherwise, you know, everybody starts fighting and beating each other up. We'd probably go for 2 months, maybe.
What was the dynamic with the band? Were they getting along at the time of Too Tough to Die? Was everyone, you know, talking?
Yeah, everybody, you know, there's all this stuff about, you know, Joey and Johnny and all that thing, but I didn't really see any of that. You know, I was living the dream right there. I had such good friends in the band, you know, and stuff like that. I didn't pay attention to that little stuff, you know, maybe certain things were occurring, but, you know.
You didn't see.
I was on the road, you know, a woman in one hand, a drink in the other. I mean, night after night, it was, you know, it was an incredible time.
Getting paid to do what you love to do.
And getting money, yeah.
Okay, Animal Boy. Now, they switched producers up. I mean, this album sounded so great. Why didn't we just use Tommy and Ed again? Because, I mean...
Probably because maybe they wanted money. And Daniel Ray really didn't get much, you know... Threw him a few bucks and a bag of Doritos, and he did it, you know?
Well, I have written down that the guy that produced this album, and I can't pronounce him. Is it Gene? Is it Gene or Jean Beauvoir?
Oh, Jean Beauvoir. I thought you were in the last album already.
No. We talked about somebody put something in my drink, but I want to talk about Animal Boy just a little bit more.
Jean Beauvoir, yeah.
He was from the Plasmatics.
Mm-hmm. Great guy, you know? And I remember doing that album. I recorded all my tracks in a day and a half. And then he took the album to Sweden, you know, because he was pretty popular in Sweden. That's where all the vocals were done. And, you know, and I wanted to be around for a drink, but, you know, they wouldn't fly me to Sweden. So it was it.
So you lay down your, you lay down the whole, all the tracks for this Animal Boy album, and then they go off and they finish it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's all I did, and I was done.
Is that this, is that how Too Tough to Die was recorded?
Yeah, all of them, yeah.
Really? Like, no, the band's not in there together recording and stuff?
Yeah, we record all the basic tracks in a day and a half.
Okay.
Guitar, drums, and bass. Then they overdub the bad guitar parts. They overdub the bass. And
did you just say they overdub the bad guitar parts? Is that what you just said?
Well, yeah, mistakes you have to fix, okay. You know, because we record live, so you dig in there and fix the mistakes or whatever.
So when the song, when you guys got in the studio with the songs, the song, the demos were fleshed out enough to start recording. Like, you guys didn't really tinker with.
No, we rehearsed. You know, we were you know, we'd go into rehearsal space and rehearse the song, so we knew what was going on. A few times we weren't big rehearsals, so we got in there, we just banged song after song. John would say, "The clock's running, keep going," you know, and he recorded fast and furious.
The clock's going, meaning we're paying for studio time. Money. Let's finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play a song, a Joey song called "She Belongs to Me." When Joey would bring, because I feel like Johnny really liked to rock, and I think that Joey had a more pop side to him. When he would bring a song like "She Belongs to Me" to the studio, would everyone embrace it? Was there any pushback on softer songs like this? Because I think this is a fantastic song.
I don't know. We never sat around the circle, all four of us, and, you know, that never really happened. I'm sure he didn't like that kind of stuff, you know, but Joey was a crooner, you know, and an excellent crooner, and grew up on a lot of that stuff, and he does a great job at these kind of songs.
And this is fantastic. Yeah. You know? Okay. She Belongs to Me. Great tune, Joey, the voice.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get so mad when people, because I love the Ramones, and when people that weren't into the Ramones or didn't like the Ramones, and they would say, "Oh, every Ramones song sounds the same," I just want to, I want to smash them, because it's not true. And when you hear songs like this and a million, that used to make me so mad. I defend the Ramones always.
Very good. Thank you very much for that.
A lot has been made up about this. My brain is hanging upside down. Bonzo goes to Bitburg. Mm-hmm. You say that there was no big deal about this. Johnny just asked if they could change the title, and then that was fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he recorded it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no...
Yeah, people want to make... Sometimes people want to make drama up.
Well,
rewrite history.
It's nice to go in print and to read the drama, you know? We all want to read about it, and that's what it is. But I was there, and I, you know... What, was I blind? I don't think so. Maybe a little blind, a little drunk or something all the time. But no, but...
But you would have known if there was a knockdown, drag-out fight over a song.
Yeah, no, none of that, you know. It'd be like, John wants to do that. And so, you know, they worked it out. Everybody worked it out.
All right, cool. Well, let's hear a little bit of My Brain is Hanging Upside Down, or Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, however you want to call it.
Just drink.
There are so many standout tracks on this album for me. I mean, I mean, as much as I love Too Tough to Die, every album, I'm like, oh yeah, but this album has all these songs, and then that album has all those songs. It's just amazing. Did you guys, when you were recording, when you go in to record Animal Boy, are you thinking about Too Tough to Die, and are you just, no, we're just going to do the best we can do, or we want to better that? What's the mindset? Just always do better.
Yeah, we pick the songs and just go record them, you know. Joey was always looking for a hit, you know, and he'd always look at me, you know, and go, after it was done, you know, this is going to be the one, is this going to be the one, Richie? And he'd go, yeah, but nothing ever happened.
And who's is that the record label's job to get the hit, to get it going? I mean, because these songs should have been on the radio. It's hard to believe that these weren't hits.
Well, it costs money to get on the radio, especially now, you know. Yeah. Some of these artists now pay hundreds of thousands to get on the radio, you know. But, no, it has to do with management, and mm-hmm. they liked us to stay like this underground band. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't know, maybe later, like in 2000, maybe things would have got played more. It was still a weird time,
yeah.
you know. MTV didn't play us. You know, they didn't like all the gore or anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, there were, you know, Didi, and, you know, there were things about, you know, Nazis and things like that, you know. So the band had a certain aura about it that, you know, scared people, you know.
But you guys don't seem like you were scary guys at all.
No.
It was just like a...
We were a tall band, though, you know.
Yeah.
On stage, we were all big, 6'5", 6'3", John at 6 foot, Didi 5'10". It was a very tall band, you know, so you looked kind of like, you know, Kiss without their heels.
Yeah, because everyone was so tall, I always thought that John wasn't tall, but then I saw him in a video store out here in L.A.,
right.
And I saw him, I'm like, I think that's Johnny Ramone, and then he was up at the counter, and he had to give his name. They said, what's your name? And he said, John Cummings, right. And I was like, yeah, that's Johnny Ramone. And he was tall, and I wasn't expecting that. And again, in comparison with everyone else, I thought he was my height. Nope.
So did you go over?
I didn't. I wish I would have, but I don't know. I was...
You were scared.
This was like in the early... This was when I just...
So we were scary.
I just... You know what? Of everyone, Johnny always seemed like the most unapproachable one.
No, he's very approachable.
I know, but he just seemed... I don't know if it was just... I've never seen him really smile. In a photo, but well, none of you really smiled in photos, but yeah, I just, it was now, if it was any time after this, it was just when I moved out here and I just didn't do it.
Okay.
I did go to a record signing also when I first moved out here. It was down in Hollywood. It was like some Hollywood costume shop, and Marky and Didi were there, and I didn't even know what they were promoting, but they were there signing whatever you brought. So I did get FaceTime with, those two guys.
Okay.
And, that was interesting. My dad was with me, and my dad was like, boy, that Didi's something else, huh? I go, yep, he's a character. I think my dad said, that Didi's a character. And
he was special.
Yeah.
He was special.
But they were both cool. All right, so this next song I want to play, this is the one that you sing lead vocal on.
Mm-hmm.
But in America, we couldn't really find this. I had to pull this off YouTube.
Yeah, that was another one that Martin took, you know, and Joey... He said, you know, he's like, no, Richie, you sing this one. I was like, what do you mean? I'm going to sing lead vocal? It doesn't make sense. And he's like, nah, you sing it. I want you to sing it.
So, but Didi would take a lead vocal or two, so why not the drummer?
I don't know.
Well, let's hear it. This is a great song. This is called You, in parentheses, Can't Say Anything Nice.
About Johnny.
Nice.
So this is definitely a pointed reference to Johnny.
A little bit of it, you know, a little, you know, it's kind of mixed up, but, you know, the line about the way you comb your hair was always about Johnny, because, you know, he had this head of hair that, you know, he just wanted to jump into, you know, and he would always backstage, he'd hang his head and he'd comb it forward, all forward, you know, and then flip it over. And it was like, wow, what silky, beautiful hair you have, John. So that's where that line, the way you comb your hair, came in. So, but
he didn't know this was about him.
No. Mm-mm. I didn't say I'm writing a song about you, John, you know.
I dedicate this one to you, Johnny. All right, let's move on, and then we're going to get back into some of your solo work here. But let's talk about the third album that you recorded with the Ramones, 1987, Halfway to Sanity. Like you said earlier, Daniel Ray. This is it says Daniel Ray and the Ramones both produced that. This that's what it says on the album.
That's odd. I mean, I mixed 5 songs on that record. And they didn't want to give me any credit, but maybe they consider me as the Ramones there.
Maybe
wow,
you're the
I didn't
remote.
Even know that. I never read that.
So the songs on this album seem to be shorter. Was that a conscious effort, or is that, it just is what it was?
Nothing is conscious, no.
No. Mm-mm. All right. You just came in, if they were short or long, whatever they were, that's right. What we recorded.
A song is a song, you know. A song right. Could be 28 seconds, or it could be 7 minutes. To tell the story, it depends what you need to do to it. There's no format.
All right. Well, the first one we were going to play is I'll play the one of the ones written by Richie. Also, the title of your book, I Know Better Now.
There you go.
What's it like for you to hear these songs? Because you don't pull out these Ramones albums.
No,
and listen to them.
It's really nice, and they sound good. And
yeah, they really do.
I'm thinking about what songs I'm missing in my live show that maybe I want to switch up.
Maybe so change up the set list because of this show. You change
this
up
the show. Rock solid. Yeah, you're changing my life.
That's a rock solid exclusive. He's going to change the set. Now you're shining a light on a lot of things that I had read and thought were true, and you're like setting the record straight. Is it true that Dee Dee doesn't play on this album?
Maybe some things, but a lot of the records, all of them, a lot of his parts were changed. Mm-hmm. You know,
even though he
was a live performer, you know, he wasn't a studio bass player at all.
Okay. And I mean,
and the same with John too. A lot of his tracks are done, especially by Daniel Ray. He did a lot of the guitar work on this record. You know, Daniel was a guitar player.
So Dee Dee, a live player, and I mean, the most prolific songwriter in the Ramones.
Yeah, a poet.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny because back in the day when I would look at the credits, I always think that the lead singer writes all the songs, and then I would go through. I'm like, oh my God, Dee Dee is writing all these songs. And that was always eye-opening to me when I would read the credits on that. The first single on Halfway to Sanity, good tune, I Wanna Live.
Supporting if I want to live.
All these songs are so great. I want people to listen to this show and then go and buy Ramones albums because they're. I want them to say, oh, I forgot about that song, or oh, I've never heard that. Or that's always my intention, Richie, when I have a guest on here. I want more people to go out and whether it's iTunes or you buy the physical copy, whatever you buy, buy it. That's why I say buy it.
Okay.
Here's another Richie composition sung by Joey. This is I'm Not Jesus. Now, I know you probably play this live because you did a version of this song on your first album entitled.
Yeah, I probably do all my songs live.
You know, why not? You should. Ones. Yeah. Don't do the Johnny songs. Just do your own songs.
Well, I do Durango 95. Johnny was a part of. I open the show with that usually.
That's nice. That's a nice little
Well, it's a good one. It gets the sound man, you know. Revved up, he can dial in the drums and the guitars and everything.
That's a nice anticipation.
There's no singing.
That's a nice anticipation song because the audience knows, oh, here we go. It's getting ready. We're getting ready to start. Mm-hmm. One more off Halfway to Sanity, and then we're going to talk about Joey's second solo album, You Know, because you played drums on four of those songs. And then we're going to get into Entitled. This is Worm Man. I just love the drums on this. It just sounds like you're destroying your drums. It sounds like you're hitting so hard. It's amazing. You're just killing it.
It must be in the production.
Well, is this one of the ones you mixed? Do you remember? No, you don't remember that.
I don't remember, no.
I'm going to say
you did. It sounds good, though.
Yeah.
Really good.
So, 2012, they release Joey's second solo album after he's gone, posthumously. You play on four tracks. Did you lay down these drum tracks after Joey had passed, or?
Yeah, Mickey's brother called me, and, you know, they got these more songs to do. So Ed Stasium, I don't know, he did a great job pulling all these vocals together and all these demos, and then we added the tracks, new guitars and drums and everything like that. And, Mickey wanted a bunch of, you know, different artists to play on different things. So there's a few drummers and a few other players, and it was really hard, you know, because we did it afterwards. It was like Joey in your earphones as you're in the studio. He kept looking around. Where is he? You know, I mean, it's, you know, it sounds so crisp, like he's right in the next room.
Yeah, yeah.
They really brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah, and they did a great job because it's a pretty great album. And this first one that I'm going to play with Richie on drums is called Going Nowhere Fast.
Yeah.
right into one more from the album, you know, called What Do I Do to Deserve You?
What did I do to deserve such a prize? What did I do to deserve this surprise? What did I do to deserve you? Deserve such a prize. What did I do to deserve this surprise? What did I do to deserve you? What did I do to deserve you? What did I do to deserve you? What did I do? What did I do?
Good stuff, Richie.
Right.
I find that Ramones fans, it's really like a secret club sometimes, because like you run into people and you go, oh, do you like the Ramones? And they say, yeah, I like the Ramones. And then, or they'll go, I love the Ramones. And then you ask them, you know, about, you know, some album, and they'll be like, oh no, I don't know. And then I'm like, oh, so yeah, you're lying. And I hate that. I like when they go like, oh yeah. And then they name, you know, they name Worm Man, and then, you know, they name Worm Man or Warthog. And then you go, okay, you're a fan. But I hate the, you know, because again, I don't want to bring up the T-shirt thing with you. But Ramones T-shirts are everywhere, even in 2019, they're everywhere. And I know that, you know, 75% of the people that are wearing that shirt, they don't know the music.
Right. It's like, you know, I'd say in order, number one, CBGB shirt, number two, Ramones, number three, Misfits. I think those are probably the three most identifiable shirts in this genre.
Right.
You know, and so is that a bad thing? No, who cares? You know?
Yeah. You can wear a cool T-shirt, but I would like them to also know the music and at least seek it out. Give it a whirl.
Well, you're just wonderful. You're a wonderful human being.
2013, you finally get around to making your first solo album.
Yeah.
It only took you 26 years.
Yeah.
What did you do in that 20? What were you doing during that time?
What, from like...
From halfway to Sanity, when the tour ends or you leave?
There was a bunch of years I didn't play. I just stopped, you know, probably 10, 12 years I wasn't playing, you know. I was doing all kinds of different jobs. I was working in hotels too. And
would you be recognized as Richie Ramone when you're working at a hotel?
Eventually, and then I'd have to leave that one and get transferred to somewhere else. Eventually, someone would like put it all together, and then you felt weird, you know?
Yeah.
In your Hermes ties. But I really liked that because it was like, you know, there's different people every day. You know, the hospitality industry was pretty cool, and plus I was running departments. I was like big cheese working at, you know, Ritz-Carlton's and stuff like that.
You had to wear a shirt and tie.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny to me.
You know, like...
Your rock star garb is not a shirt and tie.
Prada shoes. I mean, I had the whole thing going, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a departure, but I gave it all up. And then, like, I went to one of the Joey Bashes. Mickey said, you know, you got to start. Why don't you come and play? It was like 2006 or maybe 2005. And I went, and Tommy was there, and I played some songs. I was like, ooh.
You got the bug.
Yeah, because you start feeling something's missing in your body, you know, like what's going on here? And it was like the songwriting, the release, and the things, you know, what you feel, what you get from the fans and things like that, you know, playing live. So that started going, and I was like, wow. And then I went the next year, and I don't know. I just started writing again, and then people said you should do a record, and I said, I never made my own record. How do you do that? And it was a big, you know, a big what to do, getting all that done too, you know, and artwork and all these things. The second one was a little easier. And that's how it started again. They all said, why'd you wait so long? Because maybe I wasn't ready. You know, I'm ready now, you know.
That was just the stupid question I just asked, why'd you wait so long?
Well,
I'm like all those other nitwits.
Nah. I just compliment you. You're an amazing man. Did I say that?
You sound very sarcastic. Are you a sarcastic guy?
I'm sure I'm a jokester at times, yeah.
Now, before I play a song from Entitled, I do want to ask you about the departure from the Ramones. Did you tour? You did the Halfway to Sanity tour?
F40 Sandy tour. No.
You didn't?
Mm-mm. The last record? No, it was finished, and then I left in November.
And did did Joey try to keep you from leaving?
No, it wasn't anything like that, you know. I went back and forth on all this, you know, about
not feeling
t-shirts and all this thing and combating Johnny and and I was like, you know, I made up my mind that after this particular show in Long Island, I was going to quit.
Okay.
And it was a shock to everybody, you know, because I was starting a little commotion and John didn't like that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, and it was heartbreaking. I always remember that one because it was packed house and they had a big band up there, Richie, you know. I was like, wow, people have really taken notice. It took 5 years, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, I just walked out, jumped in a limousine and went away. And then the next day was a big hassle at my apartment offering me whatever I wanted. But I heard through the grapevine that they wanted me to play these last two shows I was bailing on. Then Johnny was going to fire me anyway.
Oh, okay.
Because I started this, because I quit.
Yeah.
So he says, you know, I've seen documentaries that he never was going to do that. And so I don't know where that story came from, but it was enough to shake me where I was like, well, I'm not going to get fired. And here I was, 30 years old. I was still a brat. And that's how it all came about.
Gotcha. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, look, Entitled comes out, 2013. Mm-hmm. Yes, produced by you. You record the songs that you recorded with the Ramones, and then you record new songs. And the first one I want to touch on is Criminal.
When we first met the day, I lost my mind for you.
That's punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't lose it.
No.
It's still there. Let's jump into another track, Take My Hand. Your home here in Southern California, do you have a drum set up in your house?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And do you record now at your home?
Yes. I don't record records. I just write there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to go to the studio to make a real record, you know, unless you have, like, you know, crazy stuff.
Right. But some people do just, you know, do it yourself. They do it in their homes. You still like to go to the studio and
yeah,
you feel like you're doing something
I
for
like
real.
I like the whole atmosphere, and I like, you know, this... The last album I did, you know, I was like going through one takes, you know, we all record together. It's like, bam, wow, that was perfect. Go, okay. You know, fix the problems with the other musicians and move on, you know. But I'm like a one take guy. Most, 90% of those Ramones records are all one take by me. Because John wanted to go so fast. You got one shot, you got to play it, and you got to play it good. You know, not like Mark, who, you know, he's star. You got to line up all the beats onto the thing and... You know, like, let's play the song, you know, because I think the live thing, you know, the little, rock and roll has to be a little, you know, not so perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be a little something moving on there.
A little dangerous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The, see, I would have thought Johnny would have loved you so much then because you were so economical in the studio.
He did love me because he really wasn't paying me much. So he loved me, that's for sure.
If I go see a Richie Ramone show right now, who's in the band? Who are the band members that you go out with?
Claire Mistake on bass.
That's a lady?
Yes.
All right.
Claire, you know, she's wonderful. She used to play in Marky's band, you know, back in the day with Marky's solo project.
You stole her from Marky.
Yeah, I think he fired her, and then I picked her up.
Good for you.
So Claire's on bass, and my other two guys, Glenn Gilbert, Gigi, whatever.
He pulled it out.
Yeah, he's in Houston.
Okay.
And then I have a drummer, Andy, who's also in Houston. And so he comes on the road, and he, you know, supports me when I come up front.
Sure.
Type of thing. So that's it. So it's mainly a three-piece band.
That's great.
Which is, I used to have a second guitar player, but it's really not necessary. I mean, you know, this, most bands only have one guitar now, then you need another amp, and it's just a problem, you know. So this is it now. And we start our touring again in South America in July, you know, because that's another story. I had to postpone 3 months of tours because I, you know, I had to have surgery recently.
What kind of surgery do you have?
Well,
if you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to.
I mean, I went just for a checkup and whatever, and they found like this giant aneurysm in me. And if they didn't find it in my belly, they said it could have blew up on tour, you know. And so luckily they found it.
That is good luck.
Get some stents put in and stuff like that. And it's only been this past Friday is a. 4 weeks.
Wow, you look fantastic. I wouldn't have thought that at all.
It's a really killer surgery now that they don't have to, because I was a candidate where they don't have to cut you open.
Yeah.
They can go through the groin, and like in 2 weeks you're feeling way better. And so now I'm getting my mojo back, and we start touring in July, and I'll get everything going again. So.
Well, I speak for everyone. We can't lose another Ramon.
It was fortunate. And yeah. I was like, well, you can go, but we don't know. Cause you know, it's like 2%. You die if that thing blows up. Cause it's like a swollen bicycle tube, you know, around the vein. If it blows up, you're gone. Or you're like, you know, an invalid or some kind of crazy stroke if they could keep you alive.
God. Well, you look like a healthy guy. You're fit.
Yeah,
you're good. Trim.
Yeah. I've been in the gym now. And
are you a guy that would go to the doctor and get a checkup?
Not all the time. In fact, I didn't want to go this time. You know, I just wanted to get on the road, and it was like February when I went. I said, well, maybe I should go.
What made you go? Who told you to go, or why did you go?
I think I went because I thought I had like some waist pain or something.
Okay.
Like I don't know if it was from driving. They said it had nothing to do with this, but I don't know. I just wasn't feeling right.
That's lucky then. Congrats. Good.
Yeah, and they weren't looking for this. They were just looking at my kidneys and stuff.
Yeah.
And then saw this, and they were like, whoa, you know. And I was going to, like, you know, Prague and Poland and these weird places, and if something happened there, you know.
Yeah, who knows?
So I was like, let's just postpone it, and let me take care of this, and blah, blah, blah. That was funny. A week after me, Jagger had almost the same thing with his, you know, heart thing, you know, heart valve. And that, too, they can go through the groin and go all the way up there now as opposed to cutting. If they cut your chest, you got 2.5 weeks of a tube going down because your stomach stops working. I mean, the recovery time's like 3-4 months. So,
and here
I'm
you
really,
are.
Really, really fortunate that all this happened this way and I found it. And, you know, now, you know, got to eat a little better. And, you know, I quit smoking a year ago anyway, so I'm ready.
All right. Well, that'll help your voice quit smoking, I would imagine.
Yeah. But I don't want to lose my growl. That's my favorite thing. But it's still there.
And so when will you be, because I looked at some tour dates, and when will you be coming our way so that we can see you in Southern California?
I never really play L.A. or here.
That's why I was shocked when you were actually based out of here, because I for sure thought you were like New York and New Jersey, and then. But are you loving Southern California?
I like it here because I like the weather and I like to play golf, so it's real important to me. I don't like the snow belt anymore.
Yeah,
even though I do like, you know, East Coast over there. I like the vibe of the people and everything, but it's too expensive, too hard to live there. Too much of a rough life.
Yeah.
And here I could have a car, have my clubs in the back, and it seems like an easier life.
Take the dog to the dog park.
Yeah. But
cool.
The Southern California thing is really tough on this country, for me anyway. This is in my audience. It's more of East Coast.
Yeah.
So I really don't come here. I've tried. Yeah. I played here a few times, but it's not, it's, you know.
Well, I'll keep checking the website, and hopefully you'll surprise us someday down the road.
Possibly, we'll see it. Don't hold your breath.
RichieRamone.com is where you can find everything. Right. Tour dates, mm-hmm. music, T-shirts, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter, at the Richie Ramone, is your Twitter. Are you on Instagram, or are those just the two things?
Probably, but I don't know what any of that stuff is.
Do you have a person that runs that for you?
No.
You do it?
Yeah.
All right. You run, like,
whatever goes on Facebook, you know, ends up shooting off of there.
To everywhere.
Well, I guess it goes to Twitter automatically. I'm not so certain about Instagram. I'm sure I have a thing, but...
Well, people...
I know that's the more hipper one than Facebook's for us old people of Facebook, but... That's all I know. But.
Well, Richie's got T-shirts on his website, and they're really cool T-shirts. So let's finally give Richie some of that T-shirt money. Go over there and buy some T-shirts and buy some music and go see the live shows. Do all everything.
Great.
I'm going to play some more. I'm going to play a couple more songs. Then we're going to get you out of here. Let's hear another song from Entitled. This is called Someday Girl.
Someday girl, you know. I'll need you someday, girl. You feel like a mayor, and someday, girl, you know I hurt you. You're just the one to make me bleed, and I see your face. Next to mine, I see your face. You want to too, and tell me more. It's time to fly and pick your pieces.
That's good.
That's not bad.
I haven't heard many of those in a while.
I'm gonna let you pick the playout song. I have three songs queued up from Cellophane. And I'm going to tell you what they are in a second. But first, again, I want to say, follow Richie on Twitter at the Richie Ramone. Go to richieramone.com. For us, we're at rocksolidpodcast.com. I'm at pat_Francis. We're at Rock Solid Show. Richie, I know we don't want your meter to run out. I promised you I'd only keep you here 90 minutes. So we're going to play one more song. We're going to be the playout song. I want to thank you so much for being so nice with your time, especially now that I know you had critical surgery 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. This is my coming out party, right?
This is it. And just so you know, this episode is going to drop to the world tomorrow. So this is great. Cool. This is one of my quickest turnarounds of all time. Usually it's like a couple weeks, but we're going to get it right out there. And here's the three songs you can choose from, Richie.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
I thought you were going to let me pick it. Now I am.
Well, I have three queued up, and I was going to let you pick the...
I'm not ready.
Well, here, your worst enemy, What or Pretty Poison? Which one of those do you want to hear?
Okay.
What do you mean you're not ready? You're not ready to pick one?
No, Pretty Poison. No, that was the last song on Cellophane. Don't have that one.
Yeah, I have Pretty Poison here.
No, I'm not ready. You don't have.
Well, no, let me see if I do have it. I'm Not Ready is the one that you would choose?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I do have it in here. I want to please
Pretty
the guest.
Poison was... That was a cool song because that I actually wrote for the Ramones and we didn't do it then. And then I revamped it and did it on that record.
I can play I'm Not Ready.
Yeah.
That's what you want? Like,
yeah, I
want
to hear that. You know?
All right.
We've rocked out enough and this is kind of cool because it's, you know, it's about, you know, your life ending. And it's about, you know, at times when you, through life, you wanted to... You wanted to off yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you know, nobody would take you then, you know, as you know, they kept you here. And now as I'm getting older, I'm saying now I'm not ready, you know, so don't take me now. It's kind of the whole basis of that thing.
Perfect. Good. Well, I'm glad you chose this. Thank you for that story. And let's hear this. And again, thank you so much. We're going to take some pictures and get you out of here. Here's I'm Not Ready by Richie Ramone.
All right.
Heaven can wait. I'm all-
already late.
Couldn't ask for anything better than that.